then have you done any validity testing to see if the process that is being recommended by this measure actually delivers the results that indicate, that might indicate that it's working? In other words, when you looked at the sample populations, are the nursing homes that that do this showing lower use of pharmacy to treat incontinence?
That's a great idea. Now, one would, just like for all of these other outcome measures that you're debating, one would need to be able to case mix adjust appropriately. But that would be a really, really nice way to validate this measure. But one must also recognize that the measure applies only to a small proportion of patients. So it may be difficult to see it at the nursing home level because, again, it's only a small proportion of the incontinent patients who will qualify for this measure.
This is Thomas Griebling again. A couple of questions related to when you talked about the community care data that you have. I'm assuming those are people that are residing in the community, not in a facility. Is that correct?
Correct.
And what type of interventions were included in that? Because the way the measure is designed, and you're limited because of what MDS collects, which is scheduled toileting, prompted voiding, and quote-unquote bladder retraining. So my concern is, does that really match the type of intervention that was probably provided to those community dwellers, which was probably much more interactive in terms of pelvic floor exercise, pelvic floor training, diet modification, those types of things? And so I'm concerned that there may be sort of a leap here in looking at that data from communities and then applying it into nursing home.
I would agree with you, and maybe I'll let Carol comment on this. But we in that analysis, we are beholden to what the primary care providers document in their medical record. And I might posit that MDS collects much more standardized, valuable information than what a clinician happens to document about what they did for urinary incontinence, though it is likely that they're doing more pelvic floor exercises or at least documenting that sometimes. Carol, can you comment? Maybe we lost her.
I'm sorry. I had my mute on.
No.
Probably the most common measure that we found was the pelvic exercise, but overall, we felt that we generally found a very low incidence of that anyway, overall, in terms of behavioral intervention.
This is Chris Miller. When you look at the MDS 3.0 items, the best we're going to get for a numerator is that they've had a trial of a toileting program. We're not going to know what type of behavioral intervention. And the other item that's missing from the numerator is how to determine that they are self-toileted, who are able to self-toilet. So that was not in the numerator.
That's part of the denominator. Mm-hmm.
It's in the denominator. It's G1AI, mm-hmm. Ability to self-toilet. And this goes back to the exclusion criteria, which are going to be advanced dementia and poor prognosis, which is essentially people toward the end of life. Unfortunately, this isn't going to capture people who are cognitively intact but may have mobility impairment that prevents them from self-toileting. So we're going to lose that population with the way the exclusions are defined.
Also, I think they need to go back and rewrite them with the MDS 3.0 because these are all 2.0 measures. And one of the items in their in their denominator, that question is no longer in existence on the MDS 3.0, so they'll need to remove that.
I think we responded to that in the question period. Carol, can you
Well, actually, the whole point of the transition to 3.0 did come up, although the clarification questions that we were asked to answer were limited, and we were asked to only respond to the questions that were specified. So even though some of the questions asked about that transition, we didn't report all of it, although we have done that crosswalk.
Bob, did you were going to say something?
Yeah, just as another question of clarification, are we voting on this as a time-limited measure as well?
According to this, no. That's not boxes not checked.
But as a committee, we can, as we did yesterday, we moved someone who asked for time limited up, and we can take anyone and move it down to time limited. We're not constrained to vote on what they came in.
As I look at this, it fits many of the criteria. It's important. It's a very important measure. I think it measures something that we need to know about. It's a important quality indicator. Because of the data collection is both feasible and usable, assuming that it can be crosswalked to the MDS 3.0. I guess the question is, because this is going to be looking at a fairly limited population, as a publicly reported measure, is this going to reflect overall the quality of incontinence care in the nursing home, or is this going to be too narrow to really reflect, for public reporting purposes, the quality of incontinence? The management of incontinence is an extremely important issue in nursing homes. It is under-recognized, under-treated. I can't overstate the importance of an incontinence measure. The question is whether, for public reporting purposes, is this too narrow? I'm just wondering what the purpose of it, particularly if it's not going to be a time-limited measure. I mean, I would recommend that it be time-limited to see how it's going to fall out after a period of time.
I would also, on the quality improvement side, echo some of Robert's remarks, which is, I think sometimes in healthcare we focus too much on effort instead of results. And if the result we're trying to get here is lower interventions with pharmacy, when other less costly and troublesome interventions are possible, I guess I would rather see us get the data on the results, because we know how much we're spending on pharmacy. We know who these patients are. And I would rather have a results measure than a proxy process measure, frankly, where there's no science saying that when you do this, you get the desired result.
And I would echo that. I think it is narrow in focus. We'll look at a very limited population of residents. And it's focused specifically on process. So I think facilities could end up having very high quality marks for this because they've, implemented a program, but there's no look at whether the program is actually applicable to a given resident and ultimately whether it's effective.
I think an interesting sort of side comment, maybe we don't need to spend too much time talking on, is if we think the MDS item is too vague and inclusive, why is it an MDS item? I mean, the criticism you just said is even if the MDS is supposed to be used for care planning purposes and for documentation and for triggering everything else, it sounds like the way it's worded and structured, it's a worthless item. And we've had that criticism for a lot here. So there's a lot of money, time, and effort spent into collecting the MDS, and I'm a big believer of the MDS. Why, if either we, there's sort of, I think, one of the interesting things we talk about this is how much we want perfect clinical specificity at each individual patient encounter versus, sometimes we want to exclude people because it's a justifiable exclusion, but there may be only 100 cases in the entire country. And so figuring out how to exclude it is not going to change anyone's measure overall. And I don't know where exactly we go with that. Because it sounds like what Neil is saying, that at least in the outpatient setting, the same sort of vagueness of a question, they're seeing a validity in some relationship because there's probably some trend. It's not perfect. It's clearly not what we'd want on an individual case area, but when you're sort of getting a higher level sense about a facility overall, if it gets too vague, you'd end up not seeing any validity because then it really is a wash, but they seem to be capturing enough. But it's also, I think, feedback to CMS that as they hear the comments about MDS items that are too vague to be used in a measurement set, I'd ask, if they're so vague here, how could you use them on patient care? Because that's really what the MDS is supposed to be done. It's for patient care. If they're that vague, it's a worthless question on the MDS. Get rid of it.
Could I just respond to that? Sometimes when you raise a useful bit of internal information that mid-level clinical staffs can use at a hospital or a nursing home to the level of a nationally reported grade for which pay for performance might even be involved, these simplistic process measures have perverse consequences, exactly like the doctor described, where you create a checkbox, and we saw it with some of the CMS measures on process where a beta blocker and aspirin are absolutely essential internal measures for hospitals, but as soon as they became publicly reported, they sort of lost their correlation to mortality, which is what we were trying to improve. And so I don't know, I'm not a clinical expert in this area, but because it may not be one of the 50 measures that makes it to be looked at for nursing homes, that may not be a reason, you know, not to ask it for internal use.
I have a question of the proposers of how did you anticipate this being used? Because I think you're right, you're dealing only with over age 65. I think it was similar to the measure we discussed yesterday, which was, you know, had to be dual eligible Medicare, Medicaid, and you have to have had the administrative data available. How do you foresee, I know, how are you using them in California? How do you foresee them being used in other settings? I mean, do you see this being helpful for public reporting for people to use in rating nursing homes?
Well, the feedback that we have received from nursing home administrators is that they felt that this measure, comparing themselves to other nursing homes, could stimulate them to do better non-pharmacologic incontinence treatment for capable patients, patients who could be toileted. We didn't have a conversation with them concerning public reporting necessarily, but if they felt that it would push them from a quality perspective, then it's likely that public reporting would do the same thing.
Any final comments or questions for Rand? Yeah. I would suggest then, given the comments, a vote on time-limited approval with update on the crosswalk with the 3.0 and at least exploration whether Rand could look at a convergent validity test at how this measure looks with treatment, I think, Ron, as you brought up, if that's possible or not.
Actually, David, if I could ask a question beforehand, I think some really important points being brought up about the possible effect of public reporting for this particular measure. And so I guess my question is, can you assess the likelihood that this measure would create a false impression that incontinence is being appropriately identified and treated? That really worries me. If we're taking a tiny picture of a big problem and it creates a rosy impression, I think that that could have very adverse consequences for nursing home residents. I think it's bad policy.
I would concur with that assessment.
So I would add then, for Rand to give us some feedback to NQF on the impact of this measure on either gaming by the industry or misleading information that effective management is actually being done when it may not be effective management. Is that a way to?
Yeah, I don't even think I was so much thinking of it as gaming or being misleading. I was just worried about the construction of the measure itself might take the wrong picture, so that this takes a very serious big problem and makes it look like it's going just fine.
Well, I think Neil did allude to earlier on that this is done, it has to be done as part of a panel in conjunction at least with diagnosis and other issues. So I think some more information on that would be helpful from Rand as well.
And if I could just add, and not to beat a dead horse, I think what I'm struggling with here is a couple of things, is that we've had in place this concept of bladder retraining, you know, prompted voiding, behavioral interventions for incontinence for a long time, and we're not seeing improvement. So the issue is, at this point for me, it's, first of all, how do we define those methods? Because people say they're doing it, but what it is not well defined. And second, what is the outcome? So what is critical to me is, are we seeing, A, less of an incidence of incontinence developing, because we know the numbers in terms of the risk of patients who come in continent and within a year are incontinent, while we're supposedly doing the right thing? And secondly, what is the effect of these interventions, once we define the intervention, actually on managing the incontinence and associating it with the type of incontinence, which there's distinct differences based on the type of urinary incontinence as to what treatment is going to be effective. So I know that's a lot more than is on the table, but that's what I'm struggling with, because I don't think this gets us anywhere near there. So.
I want to follow up on what Lisa said again, because I thought that one of the criteria for usability, I mean, one of the whole purposes of going through NQF is that it is a publicly reported measure. And I can see where this measure would be very useful to a facility. But in terms of usability and usefulness to the public, which, as I understand it, is an important criterion here, I don't feel that it has been demonstrated that it's been met, and I'm not sure that public reporting on this has even been trialed. Am I right?
Right. It has not been publicly reported.
Just a point of clarification on that. NQF-endorsed measures are intended, meaning the idea is they are appropriate for public reporting. There's not a requirement at initial endorsement that the measure's actually been out there or used for that purpose, just that you believe it passes the criteria for endorsement and as such could then be used for that. We would examine at the maintenance period at 3 years whether the measure's actually been out there for public reporting yet. But it would be an early test of a measure that hasn't yet gotten out in that way to see if it's in fact been publicly reported yet.
Not that it's been publicly reported, that the information you get from public reporting is useful. I consider that during the usability.
One aspect of those criteria around usability that you would have to consider, certainly, yeah.
So, Bill?
Well, just to maybe add what Dee Dee said and Alice and Lisa have said, they've said it better than I, but I think that's probably precisely what I was trying to get at in terms of the outcomes issue. And the other issue for me has always been, as I looked at all of these measures and considering our discussions yesterday in terms of you know, what other things what other domains and types of measures need to be considered and so forth. It was hard for me to look at this with this particular measure, with all of those kind of questions that have been named, to think that it provides that much more compelling value, that this needs to be added in lieu of other things that need to be explored and added is in terms of measures. So I think in terms of harmonization, how does it harmonize for the consumer? That's looking at nursing home compare, because they're not looking at nursing home compare vis-a-vis hospital compare vis-a-vis other ones. They're looking at the measures that are on nursing home compare, and how does that help me discern, and does this one provide that much more compelling value in the midst of all of that? I don't think it does.
And I think the problem is because it's looking at process. Did we deliver this rather than looking at outcome? Did it have an effect?
I think it's going to be a fun vote to watch happen. I will put out, and don't be swayed by saying that's the way I think it should be consensus. I'm going to put it out, and it very well may go down. Time limited with a crosswalk to 3.0, looking at potential conversion validity with the medication, if possible. This issue of both gaming misleading, but also the usability from a reporting standpoint. I guess I'll start with abstaining. Anyone who needs to abstain from the vote? You're going to abstain from the vote? Okay. Anyone all not in favor of that vote? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13. Yeah, all in favor of that. So 13 to 4 with one abstaining, so it does not pass. Anyone want to make any other recommendation? They like my recommendation? They're comfortable with that? Okay. Next measure. Neil and Carol, thank you very much for getting up so early in California time.
Thank
Hopefully
you.
The conversation was good feedback to you all.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. On to Measure 19, RTI.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I would just like to start by just asking a question, given that these three measures are incontinence, catheterization use, and UTI, if I should talk about the group of them as a whole, or if you'd like me to focus, just give you a short overview of the first one and go one at a time. The group? Okay. Okay, great. Okay. The purpose of the first measure, dealing with incontinence, is the proposed measure reports the percentage of low-risk, long-stay residents who lose control of their bowel or bladder in nursing facilities. Oh, sure, I'm sorry. Yep.
It's 19.
Okay. And specifically by low risk, we mean that those residents who are not severely cognitively impaired or totally dependent in mobility, are not comatose, or have an indwelling catheter and ostomy. In regards to what we mean by losing control of their bowel and bladder, on the items on the MDS 3.0, it's specifically those residents who are frequently or almost always incontinent of bowel or bladder. In regards to importance, the impact of incontinence is profoundly affects nursing home residents in regards to embarrassment, generally in health and quality of life factors such as social functioning is affected by incontinence, and physically managing incontinence can help prevent infections, pressure ulcers, other complications, and mentally as well. The treatment can promote well-being of the resident by restoring their dignity and social interaction. We also know that scheduling toileting and bladder programs can successfully be implemented among nursing home residents to address incontinence and the risk factors, and this includes residents who are cognitively impaired. And using the MDS 2.0 data, looking at the data from April to June of 2009, CMS reports that the national prevalence of this quality measure was 49.4%. And it ranged from a low average of 37 to a high of about 69%. So we know that this is a major concern. In regards to the background, there's no changes in the measure specification per se, but there have been changes in the MDS 3.0 focused on making the measure more accurate. Specifically, in the MDS 2.0, there was a little bit of a different set of response options. And those are continent, usually continent, occasionally incontinent, frequently incontinent, and incontinent, and it's in the last 14 days. For the MDS 3.0, the usually incontinent was eliminated, and the look-back period is now 7 days. And one of the issues with the previous measure was that asking staff to think about 2 weeks back was somewhat daunting, whereas a seven-day look back is something that's much more usable and I think feasible for the nursing home staff. Also, in regards to looking at the issues of those cognitively impaired residents that are in the high-risk group, again, we have the brief interview of mental status, which is a performance-based measure and will better help us to identify those residents, although also staff assessment. There's some items that are also utilized to identify those residents. In regards to the proposed CATH measure, it reports on the percent of long-stay residents who have had a CATH inserted in their bladder over the last 7 days in a nursing facility. And again, this has been an issue that has been definitely recognized, because overuse of catheters to manage incontinence, other than for short periods, is a potential sign of suboptimal care and an indication that further assessment and alternative treatment could be offered. And then when not properly monitored or maintained, CATHs can cause chronic pain or infections, leading to greater functional decline and obviously decreased quality of life for the resident. And the indwelling CATH quality measures can serve as a potential reminder to facilities about the importance of assessing and limiting CATH use whenever possible. And at any given time, more than 100,000 residents in American nursing facilities have catheters in place. And using the MDS 2.0 data from April to June of 2009, the national prevalence was, the average was 7.7%, with a low of 5.2 to a high of 11%. So essentially, the data items for the MDS 3.0 are the same as 2.0, but again, that look-back period has decreased from 14 days to 7 days. And additionally, during our technical expert panel and also clinical input from some research by the University of Colorado, there was concern regarding neurogenic bladder and obstructive neuropathy, and those have been added as specific exclusions as part of the measure. Let's see. And for the UTI, the purpose of the proposed measure is to report the percent of long-stay residents with the diagnosis of UTI in nursing facilities. And again, nursing facility residents often develop infections, and among these, UTIs are very common. The symptoms of urinary tract infection include fever, painful or difficult urination, frequency and urgency, blood in the urine, flank pain, and even deterioration in mental status, such as increased confusion. Some patients who develop urinary tract infections go on to develop blood infections. And so, again, using the MDS 2.0 data, but to give you an idea of the prevalence, the average for April to June of 2009 was 9.7%, with the low from 5% to a high of 14%. Another in terms of importance of the measure, it's significant in that it's the only quality measure that really targets infection. And this is obviously an important indicator of how facilities manage and prevent infections. So essentially, the underlying items of the MDS 2.0 and 3.0 are the same, but there was some question in regards to having some false positives and negatives. There was one study that had been performed in 2004. The MDS 3.0, although the items haven't changed, it's much more focused in terms of having a more precise definition of UTI when and also, it still does look at the treatment of UTI in the last 30 days. And finally, a small change, unpublished data analysis of the MDS 2.0 by Dr. Moore at Brown University found some seasonal variation in this particular measure. And to address this, the proposed measure uses a six-month average for the facility rather than the data from just one quarter. And that's it.
Can you just give us an overview of the change in definition on the 3.0?
Sure. Okay. For the urinary tract infection, it requires a physician, a nurse practitioner, a physician assistant, or a clinical nurse specialist to have the diagnosis of UTI in the last 30 days. a physician, nurse, practitioner, physician assistant, or clinical nurse specialist must have be the one that diagnoses the UTI in the last 30 days, or you could have the symptoms attributable to a UTI, which may include fever, urinary symptoms, pain or tenderness in the flank, confusion or change in mental status, change in the character of urine, or current medication or treatment for a UTI in the last 30 days.
So I think Roberta's done a very nice job of summarizing the improvements that have been made in the continence measures in MDS 3.0 compared to 2.0. In terms of importance, clearly established, huge problem, incontinence and cognitive problems often cited as the two most common diagnoses leading to nursing home placement. I gave that complete. In terms of scientific data, I also thought the information was quite complete. The one caveat that I would have is in the way the numerator statement is worded, I'd want to make sure that when we analyze data in the future, we're able to sub-stratify whether residents were incontinent of bladder, whether they were fecally incontinent, or whether they had dual incontinence, because we know clearly from data that people who are dually incontinent of both bladder and bowel are much more vulnerable and have significantly worse outcomes. So just we don't want to cluster them all into one group. We want to be able to sub-stratify that. The other thing that's really nice about this measure is it's looking longitudinally at this, so it's going to capture people. If I'm interpreting this correctly, it's going to capture people who come in continent, and then identifying people who may become incontinent. And Alice pointed this out, that that's a huge concern, and you cite data about that in the references, that the risk of developing new onset, either urinary or fecal incontinence, is fairly high in nursing homes, and how to try to prevent that. So I think this measure is getting at that. So I think the usability and feasibility are both very high.
As a second reviewer, I absolutely concur with what Thomas said. And would also, this part about stratifying urinary incontinence from bowel incontinence, I think is a real important issue, particularly because the care interventions are so different. So you don't really know what you're moving, urinary incontinence, bowel incontinence, and I would be curious about the discussion that might have occurred in regards to proposing this measure and continuing to keep those two together. Otherwise, I did rate everything as complete.
Mm-hmm. In regards to it, given that the measure is or, you know, bowel or urinary incontinence, I think the focus was to, there's a lot of attention given to urinary incontinence, but not so much at times bowel incontinence, which is equally important. And so I think that the thought was initially that with this quality measure to be sure that you include both. But I certainly appreciate the fact that stratifying would be important, especially also having a category of bowel and bladder because they're at most risk. And we would certainly take that back.
Just to clarify, then, there would be two measures that would be publicly reported?
I think it's we could stratify to take a look at bladder and bowel.
Oh, yeah, dual.
I think it can be one measure.
Okay, but
I think the way the data ultimately are presented need to allow people to interpret the percentages, whether it is urinary only, fecal only, or both.
Okay, thank you.
And that's going to be really important because that will lead then to interventions and potential changes in interventions which could lead to changes in outcome.
Okay, thank you.
The measure has been in use, and I found this a very useful measure. I think as a public reporting measure, it's a very good measure of nursing home quality. Internally, for quality improvement purposes, we've also found it useful. When somebody flags on this measure, it's very easy to dig down into the MDS and find out whether it's bowel or bladder and take action on it. So far as publicly reporting, I'm not sure that the distinction is going to be that important. And many of the behavioral interventions that apply to one apply to the other, although pharmacologic interventions are very, very different. But behaviorally, there's a lot of crossover. So my experience has been that the measure as written, previously written with MDS 2.0 works pretty well. It's a good outcome measure, and I understand the rationale behind keeping them combined. So far as public reporting, I'm not sure that separating them out would be all that useful.
I just want to, because you're familiar with the MDS. So in other words, if you have 8 in the numerator, you can go back to your own internal data. And is this typical of the nursing home setting where they could go back to their internal data and say, here are the 8 that were incontinent, and you actually are looking at the charts and can say this is this kind of incontinence?
Yeah, and two-way. Yeah.
Does that meet your concern?
No. Part of it, and I agree with you that in terms of public reporting, it may not be as big an issue, but certainly if people are going to be using this for any kind of research or developing subsequent interventions, if you lump all of it together, there's no way you're going to be able to separate that out. And I agree that you can find that in MDS, but it would be nice to have it within the measure as well. And I think it's a relatively simple thing to do. In terms of the type of incontinence, this doesn't. The measures and MDS don't address that in any way, shape, or form. Is it urge, stress, overflow? Never addressed in any of these measures. So,
I think that's a. If I can address that, that's a difficult question because, as you know, there's a lot of mixed incontinence in nursing homes. I think it's way beyond the scope of MDS to gather that kind of information. But just for anybody that is not familiar with how MDS is actually used in nursing homes. There's really two ways of getting at the information. One is on an individual basis. When an MDS is filled out, it immediately will generate wraps and care plans for individual items. But also, I think I don't know if most nursing homes, but at least many nursing homes are collecting data electronically, and therefore have easy access to electronically analyzing the data. So, for instance, we can go to an item, and if it says that 30% of our low-risk patients have lost control of their bowel and bladder, it's very easy to identify those patients that flag and then to drill down and look at the actual MDS items that led to that flag and see which of them are bowel and which of them are bladder. So internally, as a QI measure, it doesn't matter that they're combined because we can separate them out. And I would imagine most nursing homes, if not all nursing homes, can do that. For public reporting purposes, I see less utility to dividing them out. For research purposes, nationally, I think the MDS data can be separated out. So I'm kind of looking at this as voting on it as a quality measure for public reporting purposes. My own feeling would be that it's adequate the way it is.
Just a couple of comments. The one of the things that was striking to me as I was looking at the documents is that surely it is a continuation measure and moving to 2.0 to 3.0. But those refinements seemingly have made a will have a significant impact because the averages moved from 10 point something to 7 point something. The the extent to which that's all a function of the look back period or more refinement in terms of things like the culture pending issue that I've heard folks reference, the treatment or culture issues and treatment issues. I mean, that piece is not clear to me. But the numbers moved, and they dropped 3 points approximately, that's a significant piece to note. In light of the importance of the importance of the measure. The other thing that is striking to me, and I don't want to belabor this point, so I'll just say it. But this is, you know, when we've had the earlier discussions about the issue of wording in the negative or wording in the positive. Well, this is one that lends itself that way, or at least to, you know, overt consideration. And that whole process is a conundrum to me, because I hear CMS say that that's maybe our intent, that we want to do more of that in terms of in light of harmonization. I hear us say and NQF say that, that we consider it as they're written, and if we invert it, it's not an NQF-endorsed measure, but this is then being introduced by CMS. Yeah, so I'm not sure what the message is in that light, so I'll just let it go at that. But it's an important measure.
I think this is going to be true for all the CMS measures that was yesterday. Again, the exclusion of people with missing data and ensuring that really is a long-stay population. So maybe we could just say it once. And so, I do want to say another thing about the positive versus the negative. I understand. I think, and I find, you know, I see these a lot, and I find it very confusing. But somehow, if someone is seeing a 93% versus a 97%, it isn't as striking as if you see a 3% versus a 7%. So I think for some of these low numbers, maybe there is a public reporting advantage of having lower being better when you're dealing with these small numbers, just so, you know, they're in your face more.
Well, and again, I don't want to belabor that point, but all I, you know, what I say in maybe in response to that is look at hospital compare.
Right, that's my point too.
Hospitals just have power, more powerful lobbyists than the nursing home industry. That's what it says. Okay, so strike that from the record. We have a vote on summarizing it to approve the measure as is with two minor modifications, which is close the 100-day loophole, address the missing data dash issue, and provide I'll summarize that dialogue between the two, is that ask the vendors to provide back to NQF data looking at the measure with bowel alone, incontinence alone, to combined or bowel overall, and get a sense what would it look like, and then give us a recommendation as to why the experts, or given the data and the frequency, how best it maybe should be presented and differently look at it. Because I think until we actually see the data, it may be that the bowel and urine incontinence is so highly correlated, it doesn't even matter that you have bowel alone in there. But at least until we see that data, it's hard to have that. So that would be the vote before us.
And I would add one other thing, that if we're going to ask them to do that, I think we have to ask them, as with the influenza, to show how they're going to publicly report it in a way that is understandable
okay.
to the public.
So, yeah, and the caveat is not only look at it, but the recommendation is how would best to communicate to the public to address the usability portion as well. It's a good comment. You want to add more? Yep.
No, I just some are conditional, which I don't think we actually do. These are just recommendations. The question
there
is...
There are two conditions would be the close the 100 dual loophole and the missing data. The bowel thing would be a recommendation.
Okay. That.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Anyone else want to comment on that? What I put forward, clarify it? Okay. Approve two conditions, close loophole, missing data, give us data on bowel, and how to present that. Oh, you already voted. God. All right, great. Okay. Well, every time I've always said it, is everyone on all the conditions, everyone goes, well, they want to reiterate. So I want to make sure everyone's clear on the recommendations. Okay, next one. We had all sort of three discussed, that we have some reviewers. The reviewers want to comment on the catheter piece. Is there anything to add that's not been mentioned? I will say that the loophole, the missing data one, is already there. A catheter, anything unique about the catheter we want to talk about?
Naomi, I think you're the primary reviewer on this one.
No, I am.
I'm sorry. I'm looking.
I am.
You are.
Yep.
NAI looked like Naomi to me. That's why I went there.
Okay, so just a couple of things. So this measure is residents who have or had a catheter inserted and left in their bladder. Just one thing before I launch into this, just wanted a clarification. This was a 5-day look back period, because I thought you said a 7-day, and I saw 5-day look back.
I think
it was written as a 5-day look back. So And so just a clarification on that. That's catheter in the bladder at any time during the five-day look-back period or daily during the five-day look-back?
Anytime.
Okay, that's what I thought. So this one captures the percentage of long-stay residents, and again, the 100-day we talked about already, who've had an indwelling catheter in the last 5 days noted on MDS 3.0. It's a process measure, was previously endorsed. The importance I don't need to talk about. The five-day look-back period, there was comment in here that it was felt to minimize the assessment burden, reduce the opportunity for error, and that it performed well during national testing. The exclusion that was mentioned was residents with neurogenic bladder or obstructive uropathy. These conditions were felt to justify catheter use to reduce the risk of other complications. And we already talked about the missing data piece. I noted that as well. Reliability scored very high on this one, on the University of Colorado and the RAN studies. There was comment that the measure stability was unstable over time, with 18.9% of the facilities having a significant change from one quarter to the next. Validity, there was the comment that you made about seasonal variation, which was similar to variations that are seen in hospital and skilled nursing facility utilization. Usability and feasibility, I thought, were good. I just had a couple of questions and concerns that I want to raise for the group. One was about the effect on this measure when you do exclude neurogenic bladder and obstructive uropathy. On the data that we saw, the mean percentage on this measure from MDS 2.0 was only 5.6%, and there was very limited variability across facilities. The interquartile range was noted to be less than 5 percentage points. So wondering about that. Also, the fact that those diagnoses are used, I think, relatively frequently, and I'll let Tomas comment on this as well as the secondary reviewer, but I just wonder if those diagnoses are on record, and I've seen those diagnoses get put on the record when somebody just has, like, you know, one episode where they're not able to void in the hospital, and they get that diagnosis. So how is that diagnosis going to be taken into consideration here? And does that create an excuse to leave a catheter in for a longer period of time because they carry that diagnosis from the hospital? The other, I guess, you know, I doubt this would happen, but is there an opportunity to game the system by having a physician put that diagnosis down so the catheter can be left in place? I don't think that would happen. I think it would be easier to just remove the catheter, but just raising it as a possibility. And then I think Tomas had also some thoughts about the F-tag for incontinence and some other comments.
I would concur with Ron's comments. I think in general this has been very well structured, clearly strong importance and scientific background. In regard to the diagnoses of neurogenic bladder and obstructive uropathy, I think that is a concern to put them in an exclusion in the denominator, with the concern being that those people could then simply have an indwelling catheter placed as an easy out. The other option for treatment for those patients is intermittent catheterization, and there's clear data to show that intermittent catheterization has significantly lower morbidity associated with it in terms of infection and problems. The problem is it's a significantly more labor-intensive treatment on staff. And so my concern is that we may sort of game the system in that, you know, people will then just put a catheter in these people and not even try to do intermittent catheterization, which would be preferable if it's possible. So I think that would be the one thing. I think this does harmonize fairly well, especially with the F-TAG. I think it's 316 is about your urinary incontinence and catheter use in nursing homes. So I think that's a good thing with this measure.
The other problem that you could get into is that often people come from hospitals and they've had a catheter in for a long time, and particularly with old men, when you first take it out, they do have obstruction and they can't pee. And so a trial of intermittent catheterization, in fact, can relieve what's an obstructive uropathy. And so we really have to look at that.
Well, and similarly looking at then, is the patient potentially a candidate for medical therapy? So if they have obstructive uropathy, could they potentially benefit from alpha blocker medications or 5-alpha reductase inhibitors or things? I think that's beyond the scope of this. But ultimately trying to pair it to pharmacology, you know, and polypharmacy, are they on medications that are putting them into urinary retention, those types of things. So, but I think that's, again, beyond the scope of what's being proposed here.
So what I put before the group then is approve as a measure with two conditions, close the loophole and missing data, the numerator, and a recommendation to provide data on the number of times exclusions happen, the percentage of that, both by neurogenic and obstruction. Look at it both together. Potentially recommendation to CMS as well. Some look at how the accuracy, this is from a sort of a reliability validity testing, but some accuracy of the diagnosis of obstructive and neurogenic bladder. And CMS, you may want to give this guidance, since it's tied with an F-TAG, through the Gene's still here, through the survey shop, because we're all out there. And, we could actually double check on this from a data check standpoint. It would be helpful. So before us, approve with two conditions, one recommendation.
Just a quick comment. I guess there was a question about the fact that two of these measures were paired in the last round, and do you want to address that issue again this round?
What do you mean by paired?
Two measures that would always be reported together were in the last round. I just think it's worth at least having that discussion.
Let's do them all, and then we'll come back to that.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Ignore the woman to my left. Okay. Any abstaining? Anyone opposed? All in favor? Okay, passes. All right, next measure, and we'll come back to Helen's point in a second. 18, UTI.
Okay, an update to the 3.0. Now, this indicator is going back to what Robert was saying about the drill down is, I think, really impactful in terms of looking at all kinds of issues relevant to care, and importantly so, individualizing bladder programs, as well as, obviously, infection. So I think this is obviously has significant importance. The season variation, I think, is an important aspect as well that I think is really important with this change. And we should also note that this is limited to long stay based on the UTI from hospital rate. So I think that makes a lot of sense as well. In terms of testing it, to make certain that over time it's valid is obviously a piece in our time-limited testing. Its usability and feasibility is high. This is pretty straightforward and complete from my perspective, Bill.
Nothing to add to that other than the notation again that the UTI numbers dropped. Mm-hmm. The extent to which what element of the refinements in the 3.0 are contributory to that, but the 3 percentage points, I mean, dropping from 10 point something to 7 point something is significant, and in terms of how that's reported, communicated, explained in terms of the drop, I think is an important piece, and this probably relates to any or all of the issues that we've reviewed, all of them that are relate to 3.0. At the time that I was looking at this last week, mm-hmm. the train the trainer session was going on, and there was discussion there that some things are being changed as we spoke, or as the meeting was taking place. And so the overarching question was, are there any changes that have been done prior to all of this work being done, or are anticipated, that impact how any or all of this is considered? I assume the answer to that is no, but I don't know that with certainty. But the other thing also to acknowledge is that the further, because there are significant changes in the refinement of the RAI manual, mm-hmm. and the fact that that's not going to be out until end of May, early June at best, it just compresses the time frame for implementation and just exacerbates all those training and education pieces.
I would agree with both of the reviewers. I think this is a very important measure and something that's very usable and very feasible. On a little bit more of a subtle note, which I'm not sure we're going to be able to capture at a measure level, is the definition of urinary tract infection. And my fear in this and what I see clinically are a lot of people that are sent to me for evaluation of quote-unquote recurrent urinary tract infections who in actuality have asymptomatic bacteriuria. And there's clear evidence that shows that the overall prevalence of asymptomatic bacteriuria, both in community-dwelling elderly women particularly and long-term care residents, is about 20%. And that longitudinally over time, those numbers stay similar, but it often changes individuals. So if you look at a population of people now, about 20% will have bacteria in their urine that's completely asymptomatic, and generally the recommendation is those people don't need antibiotic treatment. If you look 6 months from now at the same population, you'll have about 20%, but it may be different women. And so that's my fear in this, of people getting misdiagnosed as having a urinary tract infection. So I think the real clarity is just making sure that we're defining it correctly as symptomatic urinary tract infections.
And just to ask about that, I was wondering about that when that was going on, because is that defined as symptomatic?
Mm-hmm.
So yes. That's how somebody would judge that and mark that down as an infection.
Right. It is, the way that I read this measure, it is defined as symptomatic, okay. And we need to remember that in the elderly population, symptomatic is different than in young people. So fever, chills, dysuria, pain with urination, common in young people, not as common in older people. So the criteria about confusion, anorexia, those types of things are important in this measure because those are symptomatic in older adults.
Thomas, thank you so much for mentioning that. I had that in my notes. Simply, again, going back to that drill down where you're really looking at the data, a lot of times you are looking at that reoccurring issue at the end of the day. So being able to really cipher that out, I think, is important and why I asked for the definition. So thank you for that, Thomas.
As an interesting side note to this, I concur with everything you've said. I think urinary tract infections are probably over-diagnosed in nursing homes, and one, I think, attractive, perhaps side effect of this measure would be to give an incentive to nursing homes to more accurately define who has a urinary tract infection and who doesn't. It would be nice to reduce your measure simply by accurately diagnosing urinary tract infections and not, what happens practically is a patient becomes a little bit more confused, a urine sample is obtained, it shows bacteria, and they're diagnosed with a urinary tract infection, when in fact it was asymptomatic bacteriuria, and the confusion may be because of medications, because of fluctuations of delirium, because of fluctuations of dementia, and I think this will help keep facilities honest in addition to looking at the other quality implications of it.
Actually, there is a published definition for that from my organization, because if you're surveilling infections in a long-term care facility, you have a written definition. And it excludes the bacteria area, the asymptomatic. So as long as that's used, and it sounds like from what you stated about the criteria for an infection, it's pretty much along that line.
Well, and part of that issue is that often, and I concur with all of those comments, is that often that diagnosis is then made solely on the basis of a dipstick urinalysis. And there are significant issues with the overall sensitivity and specificity of a dipstick urinalysis. The sensitivity is pretty good, but the specificity is not great. Clinicians then need to move to the next step, which is to do a urine culture, to make sure that the treatment is then truly treating an organism that's going to be responsive to whatever that therapy is. Again, that's beyond the scope of the way this measure is designed, but ultimately that's what we need to try to get to.
I just want to mimic what Robert said real quickly again in terms of making the data usable, you know, for organizations, because I think this is why we're all here. We want this data to be looked at and used to drive care and outcomes. So something that can help streamline this would be very important.